Blog Talk Radio.
Graham Hancock. You're listening to Earth Ancients with Cliff Dunning.
Hey, good morning to you, or evening, or wherever it is, a good day. How are you? This is Cliff. Hey, I have been posting some amazing maps that I've uncovered since our last week's program. Ian Hudson, our guest last week, had a number of photos of or images of ancient Chinese maps, and the one that I posted that is really unique is the Heldon Harris World Map Number 5. And you got to look at this map. First of all, it's dated to 2200 BC, which is almost 5,000 years ago, and it shows Africa, Europe, India, North and South America, and Antarctica. And how they did this is just amazing. If these are truly Chinese maps and the Chinese were circumnavigating the oceans 5,000 years ago, it kind of changes our understanding of ancient history. That map alone is pretty amazing, but there's also a group of maps that I posted on our Facebook page that are something to consider. The one series is called Ancient Maps of the Past, or Nine Ancient Maps That We Should That Should Not Exist. And the reason that the title is as it is, that they should not exist, is because they show land masses that in the 1400s were not discussed. They also show Antarctica without any ice on it. They show Greenland without any ice. And so these are extremely old maps. And for the most part, we know that they were copied from very early maps. Now, there's a number of people who have stated, and even Columbus himself stated, that the maps that he copied were from Alexandria in Egypt. And we all know that the great libraries of Alexandria were burnt to the ground. But when they were burnt, we lost a tremendous amount of ancient history and knowledge and an understanding of the previous civilization's level of advancement and sophistication. And so you should check that out. This is on Facebook, Earth Ancients. Go to the group page, Nine Ancient Maps That Should Not Exist. And they're fascinating. But none of them are as fascinating as this map that is found in Ian Hudson's book, Who Discovered America, who was featured last week. Herndon Harris Map World Number 5. It's just mind blowing. If it was made 2200 BC, very, very, very old, just basically rewrites a lot of our understanding for ancient history. So that's something to consider. Hey, this is the 26th. It's the last Saturday, and I have the number. We are raffling off another Graham Hancock book, Magicians of the Gods. And the number that I wrote down when I first started this, and I put it in an envelope, is number 312. And so if you chose something around 312, you're going to be the winner of this book. I'll announce it April 2nd, which is next Saturday, who the winner is, and I'll be mailing that out to that individual. It's a fantastic book, whoever won, congratulations. So I'll announce it again next Saturday on the program. I'm very interested in consciousness. I meditate on my own, have been for over 20 years, 25 years actually. And the idea of consciousness creation, consciousness studies, has been a fascination of mine. And what I do know in my research, and that of some of the other people I've connected with, is that the ancient people understood and used and connected with nature through meditation, through sacred ritual. And I find that it's something that we don't talk enough about. And my guest today is Chris Hardy, Dr. Chris Hardy. And Chris was with us about 2 years ago, and she had written a book related to the Anunnaki called DNA of the Gods, the Anunnaki Creation of Eve and the Alien Battle for Humanity. And I remember talking to Chris about, what the mindset was of the ancient Sumers. And I'm not sure if she really touched base on it quite a bit. She really was focused on it. But she's written a new book called Cosmic DNA at the Origin, a Hyperdimension Before the Big Bang. And I brought Chris on again today as my guest because I really find her work fascinating. She's really an original thinker. And for those of you who are not familiar with Chris holds a doctorate in psychological anthropology, is a longtime researcher. She's investigated non-local consciousness and mind potentials through system theory, chaos theory, and her novel cosmology theory of semantic field theory. She's authored a couple of different books that I'm familiar with. The one I just mentioned was DNA of the Gods, the Anunnaki Creation of Eve and the Alien Battle for Humanity. And earlier she wrote a book called The Sacred Network, Megaliths, Cathedrals, Ley Lines, and the Power of Sacred Consciousness. And she's just fascinating. She's really, really fascinating. And I've had her on right now, and I want to introduce her to you. Chris, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm very fine, Chris. Cliff, sorry. I'm very fine. It's nice here.
Yeah, fantastic. You're coming to us today from France. And,
yes.
Yeah. And how's the weather out in France today?
Well, just sunny. Still, the night, the evening will come soon.
Perfect. You know, so this new book is fascinating. And I have to ask you, after writing the DNA of the Gods, what was the inspiration for Cosmic DNA at the Origin? I mean, you must have been thinking about this for a number of years and began formulating your theory, which you call ISS, Infinite Spiral Staircase Theory. So tell us first, what inspired you?
Well, I've been working, as you said very nicely, I've been researching consciousness both inside myself and through different sciences all my life. This has been my life work. But after I made this specific work on the Anunnaki that revealed a totally different version of the stories we find in the Bible, and notably on how we were created by genetic engineering, and how there was absolutely no fault, you know, no sin involved in the Garden of Eden. Then I had it was like working through some shadows of our collective consciousness, and on coming to terms with these shadows. And what happened is that I got into a state of absolute liberation after I had done this work. It cleared my mind from bad stuff, you know, that I did not even know existed inside my own unconscious. And that state of liberation led to a vision at one point. I mean, hardly a few months after I had finished this work, I suddenly had this incredible vision of a possible origin of the universe as being consciousness at the beginning, you know. And that's what led me to write in a very, very short time the core of this new book, Cosmic DNA at the Origin.
Okay. So was it something about ancient Sumer and the Anunnaki that was a trigger for you, and perhaps how they viewed the universe, that was kind of a conscious revelation for you?
No, the revelation was the fact that the Anunnaki were, as they said themselves in their 5,000 years old tablets, they were saying they came from a nomad planet, and they came to Earth. And at one point, the woman scientist Ninma made the genetic engineering of a new species of humans like them, using their own DNA, human DNA, and mixing it with a biped. And so the discrepancies between the tablets and the version, and especially the interpretation we have of the Garden of Eden, as I said, just cleared my mind, and then I was able to access some kind of the spirit dimension of the universe. I'm sorry to say this, it's a little pompous, but it was like I had an inkling of the kind of reality we have inside ourselves that I have been exploring all my life, which is the self, with a big S, you know, the self dimension, the spirit dimension, right, which connects us to all the living, you know. I had this at a global level, let's say. I understood the universe has to be also like this, like us.
Okay. Now, what's unique about what you are saying is that you say consciousness may be older than the universe. Can you explain that? How? Because when we think of consciousness, most of us think of, you know, when you're alive, you're aware of everything, but when you're dead, it's over with. And you basically take the shamanistic point of view that consciousness is alive outside of the body, and
definitely
has its own perception and identity and so on and so forth. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yes. Well, first of all, let me say that I started traveling when I was 21, and I went to the east, to India, and that made me realize that the geography of our scientific materialistic culture is a very, very tiny part of all the cultures of the world, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you put this in terms of I don't know, in terms of the geography, you know, you will on the population, you will understand that more than three quarter of the population of the Earth believes that the mind survives, I mean, is all the time existing, pre-existing, and surviving the body. So it's only our little, I'm sorry, I say little because we are still in a, our science is still in a totally materialistic worldview. But this is bound to change in this century. I believe this is going to be the century of a true holistic science. And we absolutely need the knowledge of ancient cultures that they saw the shamans, the yogi everywhere else in the world. They saw the spirits in trees, in mountains. And I'm fortunately myself, I'm on door with this kind of perception that I'm able to see and discuss with entities that are not physical.
Oh, not
entities.
Physical. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you
and
do
also,
that through meditation? Are you connecting through meditation or?
No. At the beginning, it was meditation, which I started at 18 years old, that awoke my this kind of abilities. You know,
mm-hmm.
It was very sudden. You know, I started meditation. I got into high state very quickly, all by myself, because there were no books at the time, and immediately I started perceiving. Auras around objects, around people, but more than just auras. You know, I could perceive, for example, somebody one day, a friend of mine, was three quarters behind my shoulder. You know, I could see him only with peripheral vision, which is a vision that is very, very attuned to this non-material kind of energy, the energy of consciousness. And
okay.
I saw a flash of light. And I turned, I was so astonished, I turned myself to look at him. And at the moment, he was like having an expression of incredible astonishment. And he just said by himself, you know, he was turning his back to me and he said, oh, I just had an incredible idea. But me, I saw this idea of him as a flash of light. And I see also the energy of groups, as I'm recounting in this book, the sacred network, you know, like collective field of consciousness. I'm able
right.
to see bubbles, like soap bubbles, surrounding a group of people in meditation, for example.
Okay.
So that's why I know as a as clearly as I can see a cup on a table, I see those, I have those perception of the energy of consciousness. And this is why I know that consciousness is also an energy. It's not only something imaginary, you know. It's
mm-hmm.
real. It's a real energy. It's able to have an effect on even material
yes,
you know,
and this is what I am amazed at, and it really has to do with what a lot of scientists have to call, they call our society a materialistic society. We have lost that ability, most of us, to connect with Source through meditation, through expanding consciousness into perceiving other possible consciousnesses, and it's not woo-woo anymore. It's not fantasy. It's something that the ancient Maya and even some of the current Maya groups use in Central America, meditative practices. The Hindus have meditative practices, and even the Native Americans had ceremonies where they would focus on alternative states of consciousness. But I want to get into this theory, and if you could, Chris, give us kind of a highlight of what is the infinite spiral staircase theory before we get into the meat of it. Just give us a hint of what is it that you've uncovered and why it's a real important bit of information.
The fact that at the origin of the universe there would be an information field. Of course, this is what most of the scientists believe. As you know, in quantum physics there is a threshold, very very tiny threshold called Planck threshold, and before there was this first quantum of Planck, there is absolutely no possibility that there would be either space, time, particles, and then, of course, causality. So the whole space-time, we know perfectly well that it starts at a very, very precise, small instant, a split instant, long, long, long before this Planck threshold. And it's amazing to understand, and all scientists are now focusing on that, but I believe that the scientists from other fields are interested. Why? Because if you ask yourself what could exist before time, space, and particles, so what could exist before matter existed in time and space, then, of course, everybody, all scientists say it's a field of information. However, information by itself, zero and ones, cannot create a universe. You need a meaningful information. You need a dynamical information. So you need a field of consciousness. And that's why I'm tackling this field. So I pose at the beginning a field of consciousness which is interwoven in an infinite spiral that itself bears all the information for all any kind of possible or past being that ever existed in the universe.
Okay.
And this is the information that will later, much later, will create the systems, you know, the bodies in space, galaxies, planets, and animals and human beings.
Okay. Now, what's unique about this is this gets into the concept of Akasha, ancient
totally.
Akashic. Can you describe, because I know what the Akashic records are. The records are of everything before, during, and in the future will happen. Some people are able to tap into the Akashic records, but what is the ancient concept of Akasha?
Well, interestingly, the common way of passing this concept is the Akasha. The Akashic records are exactly what you said, the memory bank of but it's not only memory, the information bank of all things and beings that can ever, in any time, exist. However, there is a even more interesting aspect of this concept in Hindu philosophy and Vedantic philosophy, because I believe it's before the Hinduism even.
Mm-hmm.
The concept is that the universes are bubbles of a universe, the same term I use, and they are what the Hindu call the breathing of Brahma, the god Brahma,
mm-hmm.
Masculine. And Brahma is the creator of everything. And he's breathing, is exhaling a universe. And then he's taking back his inspiration. He's holding his breath. And it is a time in between universe bubbles. And this time in between is called Akasha. And it is filled with an energy of consciousness, a pure energy of consciousness, which is called also prana, is the breathing. You know, the prana yoga is the breathing of the spirit inside the air, inside more than the atmosphere, inside also the whole universe, you know, inside space.
Right.
So the energy of consciousness that is pervading everything, the cosmic consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another concept of prana with which I am totally in harmony with. This is perfectly my theory, but my theory, of course, is presented in scientific terms.
Right, right. So how did you come to envision the infinite spiral staircase? I just want to get more clarification about it, because it's very important. If consciousness is everlasting, is it would you say consciousness is immortal? There's no start and there's no, it's like this Akashic records. It's like beginning, middle, and end, but it doesn't really have it. It's like it's constant.
Maybe because it is beyond time and beyond space, it's possible that the concept of mortal is totally irrelevant. You know, it's another kind of, it's a holistic understanding of the universe, and this is also the kind of understanding that precisely the shamans have. You know, when they see the spirit, when they are able to interact with the spirit of an animal, or the spirit of a mountain or a plant, you know, like in a very specific holotropic plant, you know, rituals. When they are interacting with the spirit of the plant, they know that the plant has another dimension of being, which is the consciousness of the plant. On some plants, some specific places on Earth are having a higher consciousness, a very, very spiritual and elevated consciousness. The sacred trees in India, or everywhere in the world, you have sacred trees in ancient cultures. I mean, it's in Africa, it's amazing. You have all the spirits of the ancestor in the tree, just at the limit, at the boundary of the village. You have l'arbre à palabre, the talking tree, you know. And this tree is, I could perceive it when I was crossing Mali. I could see that it had an incredible number of the ancient of the village, the ancestor of the village, were living in that tree. Their consciousness was partly in the tree.
Yeah, it's fascinating how the ancients relate to that. My mentor, Humbats Men, who was a Mayan elder, told me that the Maya believe that everything is alive.
Yeah, that's it.
And everything has consciousness, so you need to honor everything. And he would, before we entered into, say, a sacred city, when we would enter, before we would enter a Mayan ancient, even though it was ruined, he would say a special blessing of greeting, which was fascinating. And it just blew my mind, because to have the concept that everything is alive, it makes you think about the Earth in a different manner. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Yes. Well, I have a very nice story that I would like to recount, because it has to do with Tamalpais, which in near San Francisco in the Bay Area. And as you know, the Tamalpais is a sacred.
Tamalpais.
Yes. It's
okay.
A sacred mountain of the of the Indians there. Hmm? Tamalpais.
Yes.
Sleeping lady, you know, the mountain which is north, a little north of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, I wanted to go, and I went to spend 2 or 3 days with my boyfriend of the time for the full moon. So that was in long ago, more than 20 years ago. And so we went, we wanted to spend the night on the at the tip of the mountain. So we had a little stuff with us to keep us in high state. And so we walk, and he knew the place, so he was walking in front of me. And suddenly, we were very near the top. There was a very, very strong, specific rock. And he passed behind the rock, and I just stood in front of this rock, towering over me, but not too much, like twice my height. And suddenly, I felt an incredible consciousness, very ancient consciousness in this rock. And I had only this, and I bowed down, and I said, you know, my greeting to this spirit, because I knew instantly that it was the spirit of the mountain, you know, of the Tamalpais mountain, why it was sacred.
Yeah. Wow.
And I just bowed to this rock, and I touched it, and I greeted, and I exchanged with the rock, you know, my spirit with the rock. And that was it. It was like one, not even 2 minutes, you know, but very strong.
Was there some kind of acknowledgement when you did that to the mountain?
No, it was like an acknowledgement from myself. That
from you. Okay.
That I felt and understood and was greeting, giving, you know, sharing with the spirit. But I did not feel at the time any answer, any response from this very high spirit that immediately I called the spirit of the mountain.
Yeah.
And immediately, 2 minutes, not even after, I went around the rock to look at my friend on where he was going. We were very near, so I caught up with him. And now we spent the whole night there above the clouds, the feet in on the tiny ledge, you know, the feet in space above the cloud, an absolute ocean of white clouds on the full moon above that. That was absolutely wonderful. And but what happened is that it was like maybe a week later, I had to go back to France, and I got into one huge San Francisco airport. And I went through the long, you know, a thing going to the plane. And
you mean a security check? You had to go through a long security check?
No, much after. I was just reaching towards the place where we were going to take the plane, to the door, you know, the gate.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this long corridor and full of great glass panels of glass overlooking the airport on the sky. And believe it or not, in the sky was the most magnificent vision of my life, with four entities surrounding this entity that I had seen at the top of the mountain. He was the one, so he gave me this vision. So
oh my God! So
response,
just before
you
left San Francisco, he decided to show himself.
Yeah, And strangely, my ticket was not exactly correct. I was like 1 month late on my mileage, freely mileage ticket. That was just 1 month. I was like 2 weeks late, and I knew it was no problem.
Well, you know, those of us who don't see things like that are jealous of you, Chris.
Sorry.
I'm telling them.
Why do I tell my stories? Because everybody can get into those. This is why, you know, that's my way.
Well, I mean,
for so long,
though, the only way to have a vision was to take a drug or, you know. But, I mean, I would love to have that kind of vision to be able to tap into another dimension, because that's probably what you do, is you either tap in or you have such a high level of acute sensitivity in your vision that you can pick up on these things. And a lot of us are just too weighted down with everyday BS, you know what I mean? That it's clogged.
Well, I don't think you are, because you are treading this path, and I don't think your listeners are, because they are also interested in this knowledge of the ancients. So what I would say to everybody is that my way has been to put myself into extreme situations. It's like you have extreme sports, you know. My way has been to do extreme type of traveling. I went to India, I left, I gave whatever money I had. I just took enough to get to India, hitchhiking from Iran. And then I was hitchhiking like a year and a half, and again another year and a half through Africa, and all the way again around India. And I was barefoot with no money for traveling for about 3 years. And that put me into extreme situation where definitely in those kind of situations, all the resource of your unconscious, of your self, of your spirit are coming to the rescue, you know, especially when you are in a dire situation. Boom, suddenly something happens.
So basically you open yourself up to the consciousness, the spirits, and say, look, this is where I'm at. I need help. You know what's going on.
No, not at all. Fact is that after a few months on the road, you know, in perfectly with no possession, nothing, at one point, you are totally part of the of nature. You know, you are me. The way I was protecting myself, walking barefoot, I crossed like two rainforests in Africa, barefoot. You know, hitchhiking, so no money. So what I mean is that you are. I was all the time in harmony with the earth itself. You know. And I was talking to the earth, and I was saying, "Okay, I stay in harmony, and you are guiding me, you are keeping me safe from anybody, you know. All animals, I never had the least type of problem. I mean, what was a problem was a learning. It was not a real problem. You understand? And so that the earth, I was talking to the earth all the time, and the earth was taking care of me.
Fascinating.
I did not even know where I was going, you know. I was just going ahead, you know. Tiny map, 7 centimeters square.
It's pretty amazing. You know, you did your doctoral thesis on psi research linked to altered states of consciousness. How does that play into this new theory?
The cosmic DNA, infinite spiral staircase. But the fact, I tell you, this is very simple. For now, I have been studying psi and psi phenomena, and they are exactly the phenomena that cannot be explained by materialistic physics. There is absolutely no way that you can explain not only the physics of the last century, you know, the space-time physics of Einstein, but it cannot either be explained by quantum physics, contrary to what psi researchers are trying to put down, like theories based on quantum physics, it won't work because quantum physics is totally indeterministic. So there is absolutely no way whatsoever for now that you can explain consciousness in terms of relativistic physics or in terms of quantum physics. The only way you can explain consciousness is if you imagine, if you posit a hyperdimension, which is beyond space, time, matter, and causality. And then, what is this dimension of collective cosmic consciousness? For me, it's not a God. Cosmic consciousness is a collective consciousness. We are all part of the cosmic field of consciousness and of the, our little planetary field of consciousness, you know, with all the animals, all the beings, on the mountains even with it. But it's like if you put it in a hyperdimension beyond space and time, then you can explain all psi phenomena, including an effect of mind on matter, like on you have in healing, for example, which is perfectly well researched and corroborated by more than 100 experiments.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the link. It's a solution, the physics solution to a theory of psi is a cosmic hyperdimension of consciousness.
Mm-hmm. So when you propose this, I'm going to use the you have the abbreviation ISS, Infinite Spiral Staircase Theory. You're talking about consciousness as the foundation for the theory, which isn't really. Consciousness isn't discussed in most science. And you're right when you say that, the use of consciousness is it's like, you know, we're all machines, we're automats, Autobots. It's
but
just curious.
You know, this is very dangerous. What science, the materialistic science, is doing is extremely dangerous because when we don't give any attention or value to consciousness, we are depriving ourselves from consciousness. It's only when you give it the whole room, you know, and value, and you recognize it in the whole of the living, and in Gaia, you know, our planet, as a living entity, collective entity, then you can understand that it's our collective consciousness that is driving the evolution on Earth of our own individual minds. You know, if
right.
you give a consciousness to all the living, you are enhancing your own consciousness and your own capacity for relating and connecting to have the experiences I had. You need to open the gate, you know, for this communication, because you believe the entity in front of you, whether a plant or a sacred mountain or a sacred tree, is able to talk to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating.
What I would like to say, because people could imagine that you are projecting. It's not projecting, because I had a lot of corroboration of my own dialogue. As I said, for example, the vision came like 2 weeks later. I was not expecting anything. But what I would say is that if the opposite, if you deny consciousness to all the entities around you, then, and even yourself in physics, then you close the door. This is what I mean. More precisely, is that when you agree to be in a field of consciousness with everyone, each one having its own input. You know, you are not lost in the field of consciousness, in the collective field. You have your own input. You can make a difference. And then when you do that, you are evacuating. You are the hindrance to this communication. Mm-hmm. You see, it's more like that.
Can you provide us with? I mean, I understand what you're saying about this infinite spiral staircase theory and its ramifications. I think what you have uncovered is the fact that we are unconscious most of the time, and this is a very deadly way to live as human beings, and that the ancients understood that we need to be in line with not only Gaia, our Earth, but the possibilities of other dimensions, other levels of consciousness that we can pick up by just simply being in touch with nature. But would you say our current existence as or most of us on Earth is unnatural?
let's say that we need to reconnect I agree totally with what you said, with your judgment. I do believe, I must say that having traveled in so many places, I have seen people rekindling their own powerful spirit, you know, and we are very, very well advanced, and that's why I'm. And we are in the middle, actually, of a very, very crucial leap in consciousness at the collective level, and I give you. An intuition I had only not even 3 weeks ago that we were going to have a cycle, I talk about planetary cycle of 8 years starting last Christmas, I mean New Year, and we had 8 years to really make a collective leap in consciousness. And I had a corroboration of this information not so long ago. I believe we are very, very well advanced. You know, we have so many, many people who have reawakened their own deep knowledge, deep abilities, mm-hmm. and so I'm very because we now are going to have to deal with the intelligent civilizations in the universe around us, you know.
And well, let's talk about that because in your book you describe the prediction of numerous intelligent civilizations existing in our galaxy, which you call the universal bubble. And is there communication on some level with these advanced consciousnesses? Because in your book, you describe the possibilities of connecting with consciousnesses that are millions of years advanced to us, which I find fascinating. But what do you think there's a level of connection there that we're communicating with those groups?
Yeah, we certainly do. I believe that the shamans were also able to communicate with on the ancient humans because we have information. Oh, I met, for example, a yogi in India, and I asked him this question, you know, what do you know in your lore, you know, about a civilization outside in Earth, you know, mm-hmm. and he said, "Oh, we know about. I'm sorry, I don't remember perfectly well. If it was something like 5 or 6 alien intelligent civilizations that
really?
Were, he said, that were described in the script in their own Hindu scriptures, you know, in the sacred books. And there was, and in the Tibetan, you know, in the Tibetan lore also, I believe in the Chinese, in most ancient religions, you would have this. And of course, in the Maya materials, you know, Egyptian. So, I mean, in the Sumerian tablets, I have discovered, for example, pictures of aliens, one with some kind of insectoid body. And I mean, you people who have looked through the ancient aliens series, you know, they had a lot of petroglyph and carvings showing aliens. I've seen that also in the Sumerian lore. So this is going to be my next book, Wars of the Anunnaki. It's coming quite soon.
Okay, so you actually pose the question of seeking the connection through a consciousness expansion of some kind, or is that new book going to be more on just what you discovered about the Anunnaki?
Well, for now, this next book is Wars of the Anunnaki is going to make a very, very strong analysis of the discrepancies between the book, our scripture book text, you know, and that of ancient Sumer that are more than 5,000 years old, and they were at the time copies of older, even more ancient books, tablets. So what I want to do is to show that the Sumerian civilization, as recounted in the tablets, has self-destroyed itself through the use of weapons of mass destruction, nuclear, and the description are as precise as in the Mahabharata, you know, the
Hindu epic that
describe even falling of nails and hair, and I mean, perfect description of the effect of nuclear contamination on human beings, and they destroy the wall of Mesopotamia, and we have in the Sumerian lore something like hundreds of poems called heartbreaking poetic description of how they lost their towns, the effect of the contaminated cloud, radioactive cloud coming from the nukes that had exploded in Palestine, of which you have a very, very moralistic version, an unfair, totally unfair version in the Bible. So I'm specifically focusing on this, on the Babel Tower. The Babel Tower was very interesting because it was the son of one of the gods, Enki. He was called Marduk, and he created a community where the foreign humans, I mean the Anunnaki, were on an equal footing with the Earthling, the created Earthling, and that was what so angered the chief of the gods, you know.
Interesting. I want to come back to something that you said that I want to get more clarification on, and you said that we as a species was making a collective leap in consciousness. How do we know this? How do we know that we're making this collective leap when we have these terrorist attacks, when we have a lot of the population in a very poor state of health and mental clarity? How do we know there's a collective leap of consciousness?
Well, that's a good question. Let's say that first of all, the scientist in psi researcher, you know, noticed more than 20 years ago that psi phenomena were constantly improving, and that more and more beings, I mean human beings, in through the population they surveyed, where the people were saying that they had all kinds of experiences. And one sure, and of course, I have no experience. I don't know what is the explanation about the fact that we have very, very hard, violent events. But, you know, it's also a time of mutation is also always a time of extreme disorder, where you can also have those very negative things that
I like that term, but, though, a period of mutation. So all all these terrorist activities and other problems is the mutating human, is what you're suggesting.
Well, they are the ones that are blocking on trying to not get into this, not let this happen in themselves. They are closed minds because they are filled with dogma. And this is why we have also to make a leap. And that's what shamanism is teaching us. It is, but also yoga, you know. I mean, the yogic path, as the shamanic path, has always, they have always been an open path for the individual to connect with the spirit of the cosmos around them, within you know, the nature, within beings, living beings. It has always been the path of knowledge. So this is teaching us how to make the leap. And a very, very interesting symptom of the fact that you are starting to make a leap is the fact that you have more and more synchronicities in your life. It means that you are connected mind to mind, you know, spirit to spirit, with events and other beings around you. And that is synchronicities. And they teach you something.
Well, you also brought up something else, too. You said that in psi research, which is looking at psychic phenomenon and things like that, you said that people were experiencing more of these types of things, psychic awareness, communication with other types of consciousness, things like that. And is that kind of a indication that we are, as a species, are evolving?
Oh, definitely, yes.
Mm-hmm.
For me, because I am in sync with this aspect of the human beings, you know, a part of our being, which is it is supraconscious. There is a part of our being, as Carl Jung, the psychologist, was saying, a part of our being is what he calls the self with a big S, and it is a real entity that is able to guide us through what was known earlier in ancient civilization as the initiation path. On this call, now in psychological terms, it's called the individuation path, but it's the same thing. In Chinese Taoism, you had the Tao is teaching people to get in sync with the Tao. The Tao was the cosmic consciousness.
So are we guided by a higher consciousness? Some would call it a god. A science that most scientists are atheists, or not all of them, but a lot of them are atheists, so they wouldn't believe in a higher creator god. But would you say that there is a higher consciousness that takes those of us who are less evolved and kind of go, okay, we will gently nudge you into evolution? How
well,
would you say that works?
I would say that your own spirit is the guiding force for you. You know, the Hindu and many other religions, they say God is within you. So what the royal path, the most perfect, quickest, easiest path of knowledge is to connect with your own inner spirit, with your self, with a big S, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the entity that is guiding you through your dreams, through synchronicities, through hunches and intuitions, and through meditation, take you to a higher state. And this self of each one of us, it's more understandable and more easy to understand that yourself can guide yourself. Your higher self can guide your conscious, more less knowledgeable material self, you know.
But how do we follow that higher self? How in our daily struggle to make a living, to be well, and to be, you know, to be a living being, how do we follow that path? What are the
techniques?
Well,
there are so many ways, you know. In if you look at a Hindu yogic path, you may have something like 6 or 7 of them. According to your own psychology, you choose the path you want. You can study your dreams. You can make meditation. You can try any kind of practice like healing yourself, healing the plants, and then trying to heal your friends. You can, for example, try the path of being in sync with the collective telepathic harmonic field. I was talking about the Taylor field, and there are so many ways, like group concert, group jamming, group meditation, group dancing, trance dancing,
right.
And anything you want in terms of a group in a very specific high state of consciousness.
Right.
And you can tread any kind of path that you feel attuned to, you know.
Fascinating.
And then you will check on what you are doing, because you get into higher state, then you understand better, then you go to different. I trod many different paths, you know. I was thirsty for learning in one culture and then another, one path in this culture and then another.
Fascinating.
Then comparing them.
Mm-hmm. So you actually tried different paths, and one, so you felt
in different cultures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, shamanic culture in South America, Central America, in Africa, North Africa. In the East, different types of culture, Chinese,
mm-hmm.
Law. Yes, I tried everything.
That's I think a lot of us try that
Sufi
kind of stuff.
You know, I was with the Sufi. I was with, as I said,
mm-hmm.
with the Celt.
Interesting. So what do you want people to get from this new research, cosmic DNA at its origin? What is important for us to, what's the takeaway from this book?
Well, the way the vision and the theory unfolded is in itself very interesting, and I kept it very true to this process in my book, because I started putting together some few ideas that I came as like absolutely necessary. I was telling about that earlier, which is that it has to be consciousness beyond space and time, and it has to be at the origin, before matter, because what is there before matter existed? You know, it has to be consciousness. There is no other way, no other logical way. A field of inert information won't do it. So, so that was it. And so that was like, you know, I write in the night. So it was like, I would say two or three nights, let's say four or five maximum. And then I started following the lead of Wolfgang Pauli's dreams, because Pauli was one of the heads of quantum physics. His friend was Heisenberg, who started it, quantum mechanics. And he was the one to bring the main stones of quantum physics, like the spin and okay. And he had dreams, and he had a lot of problems in his love life. And so he went to see Carl Jung, the psychologist, in Zurich. He was at the time at one of the University of Zurich and teaching Pauli. And but Jung, when he saw Pauli, decided that he would be taken care of psychologically with one of his aides, and he would keep the friendship with Pauli. And Pauli kept dreaming and giving him the most incredible dreams about this process of individuation, you know, the new initiation path that is organized by collective consciousness. Yes, the Chinese believe that the Tao, which is a collective consciousness, a cosmic consciousness, is at the same time this cosmic consciousness, and at the same time the path to understanding cosmic consciousness. It's a path, it's a guide, and it is the stuff itself. It's very interesting. It's like in this domain, you are learning through participating into a state of consciousness. So you are learning through participating to this collective telepathic harmonic field. You know, you are learning through getting into a high state in looking at your dreams, in meditation, in practicing healing, etc. So this is the path, and so that's a path for the living, you know, the living spirit. And you know you are on the right path because it's very fecund, it's very rich. It gives you all kind of beautiful gift, you know, on the way. Gift of understanding, gift of perception. You develop perceptions.
So, as a scientist, I mean, you're taking a radical departure from, you know, the known physics that are out there that are discussed currently. I mean, what was the basis for this? For the theory, I mean, because I mean, you must have looked at ancient scripts or something, or scriptures, and tapped into it, and decided that consciousness is more than just the term. It's existence. I mean, how did you stretch out far enough to tap in, to discuss and to learn or to understand that there's this consciousness that's out there? You know what I mean?
Well, once you are knowledgeable about group consciousness, like those telepathic harmonic fields that I just mentioned, I make a full view of them, and including techniques of learning how to participate in those and creating them in the sacred network. inner traditions. And once you are attuned to the possibility of a group of collective consciousness, one shared mind, being able to even influence events, influence the whole group, on creating a different type of reality. And if you know, as I have known for a long, long time, that your consciousness is able to have also an influence, your personal consciousness is able to have an influence on events, on specifically the events of your life, but even more than that, like in healing, you know, you can help some people. Then you just have to push it logically. If the all scientists were blocked and stopped at the gate, where at the threshold of Planck, where before that they know there is no matter, no time, no space, what is there? And the only thing they can answer is a field of information, like dead information, zero and one. A person like me, or a shaman, would immediately, or a yogi, would immediately say, but wait a minute, it has to be consciousness. There is no other way out of that. So when I was reading books on cosmology, and I suddenly understood that it was the forefront of all scientific questioning, you know, what was there before, then I thought that, okay, they don't have the answer. Why not I am a system scientist, you know, ethnopsychologist? Why not trying to tackle the problem from a different angle, since they don't have the solution, you know?
Amazing. Hey, one last question I got to ask you. Based on your current work and the work that you see out there, what do you think the science is going to be like in the 21st century? Is it going to be more conscious related? Because I personally would love to see it. I think I deal with the problems with anthropology and archaeology trying to determine the status of an ancient culture, and I think they're pretty much wrong on a good 90% of their understanding, especially with very ancient cultures. And I see it with what a lot of people think is a fairly new ancient culture, which are the Maya. And I know that they're much older because, you know, they're only digging down a certain area.
Sure.
So what would you say is the future?
Well, first of all, thanks for this question at the end of our dialogue, because it's very, very important for me also, you know. I do believe that the materialistic paradigm in science is totally on the way out, still lingering because people are very hard-headed, but it should not even be taking in so much space anymore. And so I do believe that the century we are in is going to be the one of discovering first the science of consciousness. It's already, you know, on its way, but also the science of a conscious cosmos, you know. And of course, part of that is going to be the fact that we are going to be definitely confronted face to face, very shortly, I would believe, with alien civilizations. And I must mention that something like a few months ago, the information was finally out from a physicist dealing with Mars, John Brandenburg, and he put out the information that there were traces of two nuclear explosions on Mars.
Yeah, we had John on the program, so we know. That,
really?
I had a whole show on that.
Oh, this is great. So you know about it. Wonderful.
The problem is, though, that with him, there's a lot of people that are saying, well, he's guessing that there's natural occurring.
No. No, they are perfectly objective data on the level of gases, nuclear isotopes on Mars that can be only artificial. They can in no way be produced by a natural phenomenon.
Exactly. No, it's fantastic. I'm a great proponent of civilizations on Mars. Now, we don't know if there's still a civilization there. I'd love to be. If they are, they're underground because the surface is so toxic and not really livable. But, I mean, my biggest thing over the years, and I was a big proponent of alien interaction and UFOs, and I used to be the program director for a conference that dealt with UFOs and aliens and things like that. But my problem is, and it is to this day, is until we have a group come down and go, look, here we are, you Earthlings are, you know, this phase and blah, blah, blah. You know, I've kind of pushed it aside until we get some solid verification, you know, and I'm not evolved enough to get, I mean, because I talk to some people who say, yes, they're there on a different level of consciousness. And if you can reach out and say, hello, I'm here, da, 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 da. I mean, I need it black and white, you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's just like,
well,
come down and say something.
Well, I believe that there had been a blockage, a blocking of these type of information, a cover up, and I believe also something else, which is that, and I explore this in, you know, I'm also writing sci-fi, and I'm actually at the moment. Yeah, I'm coming out with this new book, but this is my publisher taking care of it, most of it. And myself, I'm already focused on sci-fi that is exactly dealing with the problem of from the side of an empire, you know, of a civilized world in the galaxy. And we are looking at them, looking at Earth, on the problem of Earth. And one of their primary law is that they have no right to interfere and to let themselves be known from the planet Earth until we ourselves come to the conclusion collectively that we know well that it cannot be otherwise. We cannot, there is absolute impossibility. The same way you cannot have a field of dead information at the origin of the universe, you cannot have in so many 200 million galaxies, in 200 million, it's just suns in each galaxy, you cannot have only one tiny planet. I mean, this is so absurd that even when I was 15 years old, I was jumping when I was hearing that. But everybody were believing, like, you know, about this, you know. And now it's the opposite.
Topic.
I mean, there is absolutely no one scientist worth his salt who would be able to push the point that we are the only one conscious and alive on one planet. It's just absurd. You understand?
I know. Well,
the,
you know, and it's scary.
Are totally
too.
It's
scary for us to consider an alien coming and landing on our Earth soil and walking up and saying, hey, we're here. We've been watching you guys. We want to say, hey, you know, it's like, that's where I'm at. I mean, I've studied it for years.
This is very paternalistic, and this is straight from the biblical interpretation, you know, that we would wait for them to say hi, to come down next to the Tour Eiffel, you know, or to the Empire State Building. I mean, it's totally childish. It's not the way. The way is that when a planet is getting to the point that they have a science quite evolved and they have gone beyond dogma, you know, paternalistic dogma, and they're able to understand that it's no way around, there is no way around it. It has to be like that. Therefore, they are there. Where? You know? That's different.
Mm-hmm.
Voilà. And when you are at that stage, it means that for a planet, you have the age of reason, so to speak. You are coming of age, you know? Then,
well, I mean,
then you will go yourself and meet them.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, I tend to believe that these guys that are flying around in these ships, first of all, these ships are extremely advanced, hyperdimensional ships that can bounce between.
They are everywhere, you know. They are all around.
Yeah, but the problem is that they, you know, if we talk about consciousness, if we're at a level of consciousness where we're fighting and we want to, anything we don't understand will kill. Then, yeah, you're right. They're not going to come and go, hey, what's going on? Because
we'll
try to kill them.
Yes, well, I tell you something. You are raising the most crucial question. And the crucial question is this one. We have to go beyond the idea that the aliens are just one species and they are all good or all bad. And this is not the case. The case is exactly in the universe. It's a dangerous universe where black holes are colliding, you know, where galaxies are swallowing each other. And you have a disorder, partly order and partly disorder reality everywhere, including in your own life. And including on Earth, etc. This is it. So when we are starting to be adult and to face this absolute evident reality that there are, without any doubt, intelligent civilization, and a part of them are necessarily more advanced than us, it could be 1 million years more advanced, it doesn't mean that they are more wise. They could have an incredible science like the Anunnaki had. They were not, the Anunnaki were not peaceful people. They were not making meditation. They were much less advanced than we are now in terms of consciousness. So it could be the same. You could have anything. And you certainly have everything. All shades of, you know, friendly, allied, intelligent civilization who would like us to get into their confederation. And at the same time, you would have terrible foes who would just want to swallow you and take your riches and,
sounds like
erase
a
human being.
Like Star Trek.
And the main point
like
is the one we are trading, which is that they want some forces, some power forces want us to be ignorant because like this they can... They can take whatever they want, and they can go without.
Well, I have to say this: that it's you just hit it on the nose. You said something about governments that I think is some people have talked about. And if an alien intelligence were to land and to make themselves aware, it would shift everyone's consciousness immediately because it's like, okay, we are not alone. It would blow people's minds. I think there's a huge fear, too, and I think these alien intelligence pick up on that fear.
Yeah, but this is, they are hoping that we remain in that fear because they can manipulate, you know, they can They can do whatever they want if we are unaware. Yeah. And this is I believe, as a psychologist, I would say that that we should, the best for us would be to start being aware of their presence and their obligatory existence around us, because the if we had a shock, you know, a one-time shock of their absolute presence, we would react according to the deepest unconscious patterns. So they are either, you know, religious dogma, and we would project on them either they are the god or they are evil. And in order to have an adult confrontation, and the confrontation meaning face to face, not it doesn't mean violent, just a dialogue, you know. In order to have a wise relationship starting up with them on a differential equation with different races, we have to evolve each one of us to the point where we understand that we are going to have this problem no matter what, no matter when. And we have to treat the problem in a perfectly political way. It's going to be like, you know, a tiny country who is getting into the UN. So we are going to get into the Federation. Wait a minute, who is there, you know? There are all different shades of different worlds. You understand? All different shapes of bodies, minds, psyches.
Yeah.
That's what we are going to face.
Well,
the best would be to react politically, I would say.
Well, I kind of agree with you. It's just that I've, for years and years and years, studied it and endorsed it and talked about it, and it got to the point where it's all hearsay. And when I say hearsay, it's like, oh, here's a picture of a ship, here's an alien abduction, blah, blah, blah. But there was no, like, book by the alien people of some planet, like, blah, 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 you know what I mean? There was no hard verification in terms of literature other than Earth people writing about, you know, their experiences. I mean, the most famous abductee is this guy in America named Travis Walton, and there was a movie made out of it. And, it, you know, his the movie was horrific, what he experienced. When you talk to him, and I have talked to him, it wasn't as bad as the movie made it out to be, but it was still pretty jarring. And that's how we get it. We get it second nature. There's nobody that's I know in Mexico there's a reporter, his name is Jaime Masson, that talks quite a bit about aliens that I mean, their ships are much more clearly seen. Probably because in America, the United States, they're you know, they're shot down. So I mean, anyhow, until I can get some solid visual or a book about some alien who's decided to talk about their existence and so on and so forth, it's gonna be just, you know, I'll stand back and wait, you know. but I. You're making me think more about perhaps, you know, looking at it from a consciousness level. Maybe there's interactions going consciously that we're not paying attention to. So, that is something to consider. Chris, are you there?
At the same time, I would warn the people from believing in any kind of specific book from this or that species of aliens. I would say start with the fact that it is an absolute impossibility that we are alone, therefore they exist. dot.
Yeah.
And they, of course, exist around Earth, dot. Then how do we deal with the fact that the greatest probability is that they are of different species, different mentalities, psyches, civilization are totally different, different stage of evolution in terms of science. They could be extremely evolved spiritually, like the ancient Hindu civilization, and less evolved in terms of technology. That, of course, is a little different, given that we know now there was a new king of the Dvarpa town in the Indus Valley. But
right.
Still, you know, I mean, we have to consider all kind of possibilities and to keep thinking about these possibilities and not to be blocked. It's like with Psy. I myself had dialogues, mental telepathic dialogues with two different species of aliens that had been my great friends in a very, very long past on another planet. So that's a possibility also, you know,
mm-hmm.
that at one point, the same way you start developing this or that capacity, mental capacity, at one point you would be able to have a contact, that if it is happening naturally, then it will be, of course, good for you. You know, it's going to be, if it is coming from your own resources, consciousness mm-hmm. resources, it's going to be good for you. And I would certainly be very wary and distant from any group, even any alien entity trying to get an influence without your own sharing, you know, your own
permission.
Yes.
Right. It's fascinating to consider. We'll have to pick that up on the. On the next one, what is the new book that you're working on? You're working on a book.
It's a sci-fi, mm-hmm. and it's going to be called Butterfly Logic, because it sees also the rise of artificial intelligence in a good way. How we can contain it and keep it friendly. To the human race. And of course,
wow.
I have a lot of intuitions about alien civilization, again, I'm trying to shift the perspective, not trying to understand who they are, but trying to be in their midst, in their federation or empire, and looking at Earth. And so basically being... the role of the sci-fi is what's happening there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes mm-hmm. you see what's happening on Earth, and then you understand you shift your perspective. And that's very, very a good mental gymnastic, you know?
Mm. Fantastic. Dr. Chris Hardy, where can we read about you? Are you what's your website so people can check out more about you?
My blog is called my name, Chris H. Hardy, H-A-R-D-Y. And so it's Chris H. Hardy's blog. It's on Blogspot. And maybe you will be able to put it on your own
I will put it up
Facebook.
On the website. I have it here as cosmic-dna.com. blogspot.fr for France. Is that the
yeah,
one?
Yeah, there is a. The second blog is specifically on cosmic DNA, the
okay.
cosmology.
Okay.
On the other blog, on the Anunnaki, on the Sumer, is called Chris H. Hardy's blog, DNA of the Gods, .blogspot.fr.
Okay, perfect. I
will
put those
one
up.
Too. Voilà.
Yeah.
And so in August, early August, I have the second volume of my work on the Anunnaki. It's going to be called Wars of the Anunnaki, Self-Destruction in Ancient Sumer. It's going to be on my blog, DNA of the Gods, the previous book.
Fantastic. That's going to be published by an American publisher, Inner Traditions, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Fantastic. Chris, it's been fun, as always, and we'll definitely have you back
when
another book comes out. And continued success.
Thank you so much. It has been a great, great pleasure for me to be with you and your audience. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. So that was Chris Hardy, and that book is Cosmic DNA at the Origin, A Hyperdimension Before the Big Bang, The Infinite Spiral Staircase Theory. And Chris is amazing because it's so rare and refreshing to speak with someone who's a scientist who can relate to consciousness, which is what we're really should be focusing on as a biological being. We're not machines, and most science considers us machines. That's my biggest problem. My biggest problem with orthodox medicine is that we're looked at as diseased machines. We're not looked at as healthy, vibrant beings. We're analyzed, we're processed, we're scanned, and hey, if you don't have a tumor, get out of my office. organized medicine is just so bad. I'm sorry. People can say, oh, Cliff, it saved my brother, it saved this. Well, look, anyhow, I can tell you stories. Hey, I hope you have a great day. Next week, The Medicine Hunter is on our show. We're going to talk about ayahuasca. We're going to talk about the process of ayahuasca, what you should know about it, what happens when you use it and you take it, and the levels of consciousness that are achieved when taking ayahuasca. I hope you'll join me. Have a great day.